Eyes glanced back to the woods, where the small group of orcs that had almost overtaken them in the woods was making their way into the field. That was bringing the number of orcs coming their direction into the high teens, and Rachel didn't want to have to face them while worrying about the kids. The group was almost to the steps, though, and the last few children were climbing up. They were almost to safety. Not all the children. Supergirl yelled out to her, pointing at one of the smallest boys who had separated himself from the group, darting away from the porch, down the path, away from safety, crying as he fled in terror. Rachel's heart dropped, and she rushed after him without hesitation. The boy tripped, screaming out as he fell down, hitting the ground hard. The nearest orc was only 2 steps away from him, and Rachel was 3. Throwing all of her body weight into it, she dove at the orc, tackling him from the side and sending them both tumbling to the ground, but away from the boy. Rachel's sword was knocked from her hand and fell to the ground as Rachel struggled to keep her skin away from the gnashing teeth. Bracing her arm against the orc's neck, she drove her dagger through his eye socket. But there was no time to rest, and she jumped to her feet as another orc bared down on the boy. Grabbing her sword again, she knocked the orc back with a squared kick to the chest, before using the orc's lack of balance to slice down through his head. One more now, coming at her from the side, and she sliced through the air with her dagger, which missed the sweet spot and bounced off the hard bone, knocking her off balance. The orc rushed her, knocking her over, his teeth latching down onto her forearm, denting the leather bracer and pinching her skin. She cried out in pain, but used the angle to shove her knife through his temple. Kicking him off, she didn't stop to check her arm for any broken skin. Instead, shoving her dagger back into her scabbard, she rushed back to the little boy, scooping him onto her hip with one arm, wincing a little at the weight. It was harder to run now, but she moved as quickly as she could, dodging the oncoming orcs, swiping her sword left and right, severing necks and dropping bodies as they crossed her path. She was fighting with a furor, a need to save these children, and nothing was going to stand in her way. The porch was only a few more steps away, and she rushed up them, dropping the boy gently into one of the other children's care and doing a quick head count. They were all there. There were still a handful of the dead in the field, close enough to the house to be a threat, and, checking to make sure that the kids stayed in place, she stepped into the path again, driving her heavy sword through bones and heads, dropping the last few of the fresh orcs. They made it. Safety. Sheathing her sword, she turned to step up towards the door, but was greeted by the loud, snarling growl of the huge dog stepping out of the dark doorway.
So close.
29. The Ranger and the Cop. After half an hour, Dez gripped Ledger's carpet-covered sleeve to stop him.
"They're headed straight for the bus," she said, panic bursting in her voice.
"Shit," he said, realizing she was right.
"How do they know about it?"
Dez demanded.
"No one knew we were there."
"Maybe they don't," said Ledger. "I ran into some of these clowns near here. They had a camper in the woods. That's where they took Lindsay. I chased her through the forest and came to the farmhouse. This road would go right to that campsite, and it's the easiest route. These guys must have used a forest path or some farm road to maybe try and catch some stragglers from Appomattox. They'd have stuck to the woods for their raid, but to take prisoners back to their camp is easier if they used this road, especially at night."
"But they're going to go right to the bus. They probably don't even know it's there. How would you know?"
"Because these guys have been working the woods west of you, staying off the main roads to avoid National Guard patrols. It's your good luck that they didn't find you sooner, and sorry to say, it's also good luck the guard didn't find you and bring you into the rescue station. Being out here probably saved your lives."
It was a small, cold consolation, and Ledger could see it on her face.
"We have to do something. They're going to walk right up to the bus. Maybe some of them already have."
Ledger thought about all those kids and felt a coldness in his heart.
"I know," he said. "And we have to be ready for that possibility. But consider this, Dez. These assholes are out here rounding up prisoners. They're not going to kill those kids. They'll want to add them to their catch and take them back."
"Only women and girls," she fired back. "There are boys back there. They'll just up and kill them."
"Maybe not."
"Why the hell not?"
she demanded. He looked at her.
"Don't be naive. Her face, already pale in the bad light, went whiter still.
God!
How much farther? He asked, then had to jab her in the shoulder to get her to focus.
Hey! How much farther to the bus?
She blinked and then looked around.
3 miles, tops.
Okay, he said, quickly. New plan. You keep following them. I'm going to see if I can circle around and get in front of them. The bus is our target. If there's anyone else there, more of them, I mean, then you and I will regroup and make a new plan. Don't look for me. I'll find you.
And if it's just these six?
He shrugged. Then it's going to suck to be them. But listen, don't go Billy the Kid on me, okay? You follow and wait, and then we hit them on my go order. Capiche?
She clearly didn't like it, but Dez nodded. As he began to move off, she caught his wrist.
Ledger, she said, we're going to get my kids back, no matter what it takes, no matter what we have to do. You understand me?
Yes, ma'am, he said and sketched a salute.
Ledger, what?
Call me ma'am again and I'll kneecap you. He grinned and moved off into the woods. It was rougher terrain, but that did not matter. The group of men could only go as fast as their weakest and smallest prisoner. He had no such restrictions. Within minutes, he'd pulled parallel to the group and then raced on ahead. He stayed in the woods, dodging vines and two zombies he didn't bother to stop and kill. The ground sloped upward, and he ran up, trying to ignore the protests of old scar tissue and middle-aged knees. Instead, he accepted the pain and ate it, fed on it, let it fuel the anger that drove him on. He tried not to think about what horror might have come for his wife and child while he was away trying to save the world from the wrong doomsday weapon. Had someone come to help them? Had they fallen to the dead? Or had it been men like these who had arrived when no one else would come? That was another kind of pain that threw gasoline on the fires of his hate. 10 minutes later, he found the bus. It sat on dead tires, and all around it there were bodies. None of them were alive.
30. Rachel L. The snarling dog bore down on Rachel, and she drew her knife slowly, trying to keep the kids behind her. She didn't want to hurt the animal, but she only had one knife, and the dog had a mouthful of dangerous weapons. She'd never been on this side of a dog attack, never quite witnessed how many teeth a dog that size could have. But she knew how much damage an angry dog could do to her, to the kids. And after everything, she wasn't going to let any of the kids get hurt.
No, Baskerville, don't!
A young girl's voice rang out from the darkness behind the snarling dog. It wasn't one of the heroes, though. Rachel's eyes darted up to the doorway as the dog stepped back, his dark eyes still fixed on her, still giving a low growl, but teeth no longer bared.
You got bit,
the girl said from the darkness.
I saw you.
Rachel glanced down at her arm before holding her hands up, dagger still in one of them. Then she raised her arm.
It didn't break the skin. See? Prove it,
said the voice, and there was a metallic click. Rachel knew the sound of a shotgun hammer being cocked back.
Show me.
Rachel fumbled with the buckle on the bracer for a moment before sliding it off. Then she raised her bare arm to show the bruised but unbroken skin.
I'm not infected. None of us are. But there are still some of those things out here. It's just me and some kids. Please, can we come in? No, I don't know you.
One of the little ones called out.
Is Miss Dez here? Rachel said Miss Dez would be here.
The little girl stood with her arms wrapped around the boy that Rachel had saved. There was a scuff of a footstep, and then a young woman stepped out of the shadows and into the moonlight. She held a heavy shotgun with the black barrels trained on Rachel's chest. However, her eyes flicked toward the kids. The dog stood with her, and Rachel could see a horrible wound on its head and the line of fresh stitches. The dog looked mean and maybe a little crazy. The young woman frowned.
You know Dez? I don't, Rachel admitted. But these are her kids. She's been protecting them, and she went looking for supplies or a new place to hole up. She was supposed to come back and get them, but she never did. I found them in a bus out on the highway. There were monsters everywhere, and some bad men, too. I'd seen this place and thought I'd bring them here so they'd be safe while I went to look for her.
Rachel glanced over her shoulder before looking back to the girl. Uncertainty was carved into her young features.
Look, said Rachel. We can't stay out here. It's not safe. You have the gun and the dog. You can even take my knife. Just let us in.
The girl considered for a moment before lowering the shotgun slightly. Baskerville stepped down to sniff at Rachel and then at a couple of the kids. He'd stopped growling when the girl lowered her weapon. In the fields behind them, one of the orcs moaned. Far away, another seemed to answer its plaintive, endlessly hungry call. The girl nodded to herself, then she stepped to one side and jerked her head toward the front door.
Get in, she said, but don't do anything stupid. Thanks,
Rachel told her, and began gently but quickly pushing the kids up the stairs. When they were all inside, she paused and glanced back over the field, over the shadowed mounds of bodies in the moonlight.
We made it,
she thought.
We'll be safe here.
Then she spotted a figure standing at the edge of the field, almost lost in the shadows of the forest. The girl with the shotgun followed her gaze.
It's one of the zombies, said the girl.
The figure walked a few paces forward, and moonlight bathed his face. Rachel saw dark eyes and a wide, white smile. Hair stood up all along Baskerville's spine, and once more he uttered a low, deadly growl. However, this time it was directed to the shadowy figure. Then the man turned and, without haste, walked into the utter blackness under the trees. Rachel watched him go, then she turned to the girl to tell her that it wasn't an orc out there, but it wasn't necessary. The girl looked like someone had punched her in the gut. No, worse.
It's them,
whispered the girl in a voice that was full of sickness.
We need to talk,
said Rachel. The girl nodded, and her face was a ghastly white.
Not out here.
She went in, and the big dog followed. Rachel lingered a moment longer, looking at the featureless blackness of the trees.
Okay,
she thought.
This is really, really bad.
31. The Ranger and the Cop. Ledger drew his gun and moved down the hill. The camp Dez had built around the bus was ruined. There was blood everywhere, splashed on the side of the bus, spattered inside and streaked along the ground. Bodies lay in ungainly sprawls, but Ledger could not find bullet wounds or shell casings. The wounds he did find confused him. They weren't the normal stab or slash wounds, nor were they the deep clefts left by an axe blade. No, these were very long wounds, the kind a sword might make. From the angle, depth, and length of the cuts, Ledger guessed the weapon hadn't been a Japanese katana, which left injuries more like scalpels. A cavalry sword? Or something stolen from a museum, perhaps? That wasn't out of the question. He'd been planning on looting a museum for older and sturdier weapons and maybe some real armor. Whoever'd used the sword was a little sloppy, but had some moves. He saw boot marks from small feet. A teenage boy with a narrow foot, or a woman. That didn't square with Dez's intel. The adult she'd left in charge, Mr. Beale, would have been too big and, according to Dez, not much of a fighter. And none of the kids were supposed to be old enough to do this kind of damage. So who was the swordsman? Correction, he thought. Swordswoman.
Curiouser and curiouser, he murmured. The corpses had head wounds, but there were smears to suggest that at least one of the dead had reanimated and walked off. There were no small bodies, and he thanked God for that. If God was up there and listening. As best he could, by the pale moonlight, he tried to read the scene, and it soon became clear that there were several overlapping stories here. Based on the orientation of footprints, particularly of which sets were more recent and overlapped others, the truth began to emerge. The teenager, or woman, and he was moderately sure now that it was a woman, had led the kids away from the bus after the fight. However, there was a second group of prints that seemed to almost obliterate the marks of the swordswoman's group. All of these footprints were male. It was a large party of men, and they'd come to the bus, poked around for a while, and then left. However, they went in exactly the same direction as the woman and the kids, following them. Or hunting them, More of the NKK? The sinking feeling in Ledger's gut told him that his guess was right. If there had been better light, he might have been able to tell how much time had passed between when the woman took the kids and when the men began to follow. Best-case scenario was half a day. Men could move faster through the woods than a bunch of kids, even if they had to follow the trail at night. Ledger heard a sound and paused to listen. It was the rude laughter of the men leading their captives along the road. Ledger was already tired of them, of their existence. And although he'd just met Des Fox and had never met any of the kids, they belonged to the Stebbins County refugees. He'd liked Billy Trout and liked the things the man had said about Des. She was a little harder to like in person, but he reckoned that he wasn't seeing her under the most convivial circumstances. Fair enough. Ledger checked his weapon, looked around for the best vantage point, and then stepped into shadows. He had no doubt at all that Des would be following the men, or that she would be ready. His concern was that she would not freak out when it was clear the bus was empty. Nothing to do about that now, but try to ride the wave once it started and hope for the best. He waited through 5 endless minutes, and then he heard a male voice ring out in sudden surprise. "Hey, look at that shit!" The man with the flashlight and his partner with the M16 came running up the road. Ledger heard the rifleman yell, "Jose! Nux! Stay back! Keep an eye on those bitches! Barney! Turk, get your asses up here!" Ledger waited until the 4 guards, the 2 from the front and the 2 working the rear of the sad caravan, began stalking forward, all of them with guns, all of them alert to danger, and all of them looking the wrong way. Ledger hoped Des Fox was ready, because he damn well was. He stepped out of the shadows, closing in at an oblique angle, behind the range of the rearmost man's peripheral vision. He moved without a sound and made it all the way to the closest of the 4. The man, a bruiser with huge hands clamped on a double-barrel 12-gauge, never saw Ledger coming. 1 minute he was working his way forward with his friends, and then he was dead. Ledger shot him in the back of the head from 3 feet away, then turned to fire 2 rounds at the other man in the back, and then 4 rounds at the first 2. Pop, 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 pop. 8 shots. 8 muzzle flashes brighter than the moonlight, 4 men falling. It hadn't been a fight. Ledger hadn't wanted a fight, not a fair one, never a fair one with men like these. He spun in time to see more muzzle flashes in the darkness. There were screams, high and shrill and filled with terror, as the women saw the fire from the guns, heard the shots, but did not yet understand. All they could know is that death and horror had once more reached out to them. Helpless, bound, humiliated, and afraid, all that was left for them to do was scream. And so they screamed. Suddenly a voice rose, louder than the thunder of the guns. A woman. Des.
"Shut the fuck up!"
She bellowed it with all of the leather-throated volume of a drill instructor. The sound of her voice and the power promised by it smashed through the screams with more shocking force than a slap to each screaming mouth. The women flinched back, stunned to silence, all turning to stare at the woman who had appeared out of the night as if conjured by dark magic. Des lowered her smoking gun. The 2 men who had been guarding the prisoners were down, their heads pulped by hollow-point rounds. "Officer Fox," said Ledger, being formal in order to make a statement, to suggest that some kind of old-world order still existed. "All the hostiles are down." Des glanced at him, then nodded.
"Secure the perimeter. I'll release the prisoners."
He was pleased that Des had understood and was quick enough to roll with the drama. He had put her in charge of the moment, and she took that role and ran with it. A woman in charge, a man taking her order. It was a useful fiction in the moment, and he could see the panic ebb ever so slightly among the prisoners. Ledger faded back and gave Des a moment to cut the first woman free, then watched with approval as she handed her knife to the woman. It gave the freed prisoner a task, and it gave her power. She would free her fellow prisoners. And it set a precedent that as each one was freed, she turned to help with the person in captivity next to her. Des was doing it exactly right. This wasn't stuff they taught in the military or in the police. It was the kind of thing learned through experience and compassion out here in the Stormlands. It was a kind of benign manipulation that turned a helpless prisoner into a member of a winning team.
"Ledger,"
called Dez.
"Report."
He trotted over. The women shied back from him and pulled the children close, assuming a role of strength and protection even in their fear. In quick words, but a deferential tone, Ledger told her that the bus was empty, there were no indications that any of the kids had been hurt, and that they had been led away by an armed woman. He paused and told her that a party of men had come along some time later and appeared to be following. This dragged some sick cries from the women, but Dez kept her cool. She looked around for the oldest and calmest looking of the women.
"What's your name?"
"Shannon Bird," said the woman.
"Okay, Shannon, here's the deal. Captain Ledger and I are going to find my kids. We're going to leave right now. You and the others can take the guns from the dog meat over there on the road and stay here until we come back, or you can all come with us. You get to make the call, Shannon. This isn't a democracy."
Shannon studied her for a moment, then looked at the others. As she did so, she idly touched the rope burns on her throat and fingered the edges of her torn blouse. They were bruises in the shape of a man's grasping hand on her upper arm. She walked over to one of the dead men, bent, picked up his shotgun, hefted its weight in her hand, paused for a moment, spit on the corpse, and then walked back to Dez.
"We're going with you."
The other women milled around for a moment, and the kids stared in shock and uncertainty. Then a teenage girl, who had a split lip and a black eye, went and got the other shotgun. She cracked it open, checked the rounds, knelt and picked the dead man's pockets for extra shells, stuffed them in the pockets of her jeans, and rejoined the group.
"I used to hunt wild pig," she said in a thick southern accent. "I'm okay to hunt some more of them."
That did it. The other women and some of the kids took guns, knives, ammunition, and water. Dez and Ledger gave them the world's shortest course in gun safety, and then they turned toward the trail of footprints leading into the woods.
"This isn't going to be easy," said Dez.
"Nothing is easy anymore,"
said Shannon.
"Nothing was ever easy,"
said the southern girl. They headed into the woods. Hunting. 32. Rachel L. and Lindsay.
"We need to get the kids somewhere safe,"
Rachel insisted as she followed the girl through the living room, dining room, and into the kitchen. She buckled her bracer back on as she walked. The kids, heroes and little ones, had settled around the big kitchen table, most sitting, some standing, all of them looking around at their new surroundings in silence. There was almost a sense of wonder in them, as if they'd forgotten what it was like to be anywhere but inside a blood-stained bus.
"They're safe here,"
the girl said, setting the shotgun down on the table.
"No, they're not. Look, let's start with who's who, okay?"
Rachel asked.
"I'll go first. I'm Rachel. I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm a long way from home, but I'm trying to find people to bring them to safety. Your name is..."
"Lindsay,"
the girl finally responded.
"Okay, Lindsay, I'd say nice to meet you, but that would be kind of weird."
"Tell me about it,"
Lindsay muttered.
"There are some really bad men after us,"
said Rachel.
"And I think that was one of them out there. So we need to get the kids somewhere safe. Is there an attic or a basement, somewhere they can hide?"
Lindsay nodded.
"There's a basement and the door's really solid. Someone put a crossbar on it, you know, after, and they reinforced the wood with some kind of metal. Stainless steel, I think. There's lots of stuff down there, but as long as they stay quiet, they'll be able to hide. Mind showing me?"
Lindsay nodded and opened a door that was built into the wall so that it looked like the front of a pantry. It was hard to tell if that was something done before the dead rose or after. Probably after, Rachel decided, to hide it from scavengers. She wondered what happened to the clever people who did that, and who reinforced the door so heavily from the other side. After all those precautions, what had tripped them up? What was the mistake that killed them? She wanted to ask Lindsay, but doubted the girl knew. And maybe that wasn't the right conversation to have in front of the kids. The basement was large and very solid, with a poured concrete floor, wooden rafters, and boxes of canned food. There was a big stack of furniture pads in one corner, more than enough for everyone to have a bed and something to cover themselves. The pads were old, covered with cobwebs and spider eggs, but who cared? Rachel tapped Supergirl on the shoulder and drew her to one side.
Okay, I'm going to go check the rest of the house with Lindsay,
she said.
You're in charge down here. I need you to make some smart choices. Everyone gets food and picks a spot to sleep. You and the other heroes make sure they all stay calm. Understand?
The girl nodded, eyes wide with fear, but her chin was firm.
Being a hero,
thought Rachel.
Nice. Now,
she said, lowering her voice.
If anything happens upstairs, I want you to close the door and bar it from the inside. Once you do that, no one will know you're here, but you have to be absolutely quiet. Not a sound from anyone. Promise?
I promise,
said the young hero. Rachel held her fist out for a bump, smiled, and turned to the group of kids.
Okay, troops, we need to wait for Miss Dez. She's going to come back soon, but until then, you need to stay completely silent down here. I know all of you can do that. Wonder Woman, Black Widow, and all the other heroes would be so proud of you. Whatever you hear upstairs, stay here and stay quiet.
The kids nodded, their eyes huge and haunted. Rachel followed Lindsay back upstairs, praying to herself that this would work. 33. The Ranger and the Cop. It was a nightmare trip through the woods. Ledger could feel it, and he was a trained special operator. Dez Fox had been a combat soldier in Afghanistan and was an experienced cop, but he knew she was feeling it too. The women and children who moved through the Black Forest with them were refugees of an ongoing horror. He hoped that their worst memories were behind them and not waiting to be experienced. The moon was moving behind the far hills, and it dragged its generous light with it, yielding the woods to armies of shadow. It would have been difficult enough if the only dangers waiting for them were rabbit holes, vines, and deadfalls. If only. Ledger had Dez's maglite and picked out their trail. The group of men had not been gentle with the forest, instead choosing to smash obstacles out of their way as often as possible. That, Ledger knew, had to have been noisy because the passage of those men had pulled behind it a wake of hungry dead. Drawn to noise, movement, lights, and the smell of human flesh, the zombies had come from all over the forest and were trying to catch those men and the party of children that went through here first. Ledger covered his light and stopped his party 50 feet back from a loose knot of shambling dead.
"We have to go around,"
said Dez. "We can't. We'll lose their trail and lose too damn much time." Dez pointed with her Glock.
"We don't know how many of them there are."
"No, but the wind's blowing this way. They won't know we're coming up on them, and we can take them out one at a time. These things don't learn from what happens from their buddies. Killing them is rinse and repeat."
"It's not that easy, Captain Macho."
"Of course it isn't." He holstered his pistol, handed her back the flashlight, drew his rapid-release knife and a heavier K-bar. "Here's a plan. You keep the civilians together and keep them moving. I'm going to see if I can clean up our trail."
"Why you and not me?"
He smiled. "You know the kids," he said. "The women trust you. Lindsay trusts you. You're 30 years younger than me, and that makes me the most expendable of the two of us."
"But..."
"And no offense meant, Dez. You're a cop, and I'm what I am."
"Which is?"
"A killer." Ledger could hear the bleak sadness in his own voice, and he left her without another word, moving quickly along the path. 34. Dez Fox and the Refugees. Dez watched, squinting through the gloom, not risking the flashlight to see what Ledger was doing. All she could make out was a confusion of dark forms moving within the greater wall of shadows ahead. Soft sounds drifted back, but they were indistinct. The other women and kids crowded around her, asking hushed questions, seeking comfort. It made Dez feel weird. Back in Stebbins County, despite wearing a uniform and badge, she was hardly the pillar of the community. Known for her drinking, sleeping around, off-duty brawling,
on-duty brutalizing of child molesters and wife-beaters, and being generally regarded as a redneck hick cop. No one had ever held her out as a role model or a leader. And then the world ended. During the outbreak, she'd stayed alive and on her feet while other people fell. Even her partner, J.T. Hammond, a seasoned cop and the closest thing to real family Des had, was bitten. He'd died a hero's death, but he'd still died. It left Des in charge of the kids who had gone to Stebbins Little School because that was the town emergency shelter. The parents and teachers who'd taken them there, along with most of the county's children, had died. Only a few hundred kids and a dozen or so adults were left. All of them deferred to Des, drawn to her strength more powerfully than they were repelled by her pre-outbreak reputation. For the last months, she'd protected the kids at the bus. Now she had a bunch of women who had been brutalized by the living, by the kinds of men Des had always despised. Instead of playing nursemaid or team leader or whatever the hell she was supposed to be, Des wanted to be ranging ahead to find the NKK thugs and see how many of them she could dismantle. Maybe she'd go crazy and make a bandolier of nutsacks. That might be fun. Might be a good way to go all the way nuts. Except Billy Trout was alive. Alive. The other kids she'd saved from Stebbins were alive. And the kids from her bus were still alive. They hadn't found any small bodies along this path. She forced her hands to stop shaking and hoisted a convincing smile of confidence onto her mouth as she calmed the women. She assured them that everyone was fine, it was all cool, and that Ledger was following her orders to clear the road. The women, desperate for something to believe, clung to her words as if they were gospel. Then, much sooner than she expected, Ledger came back, moving quickly but without reckless haste. He waved Des over for a quick private chat. "I took out a few of the deadheads," he said, "but there weren't as many as I thought. Stragglers, mostly. I was going to keep going, but I spotted the hunting party."
"Jesus! Did they have my kids?"
"No," said Ledger, "and that means we caught a break. No, make that two breaks."
"What do you mean? Since when was Lady Luck giving us anything but a bad hand job?"
He grinned. "Stealing that," he said. "But to answer the question, I think whoever's with the kids is smart, and it's pretty obvious she knows she's being followed. There were a couple of times along the way here that I thought she tried to hide her trail, and up ahead, the NKK guys are trying to decide which of three separate trails to follow. The gal with the sword pulled a fast one."
"I guess this is a you-go-girl moment, but how's that help us? We don't know which trail she took, do we?"
"I think maybe we do. One trail heads off southwest, and I think it's supposed to look like the kids are circling back to the bus. The second trail heads due northeast toward the Appomattox rescue station.
That's been overrun."
"Sure, but I think Sword Gal wants whoever's following to think she doesn't know that. Right now that trail looks best, and it follows the path of least resistance."
"Oh. You said there was a third track, though."
"Yep, and even though it's not much of a trail to follow, I think it's what the Sword Gal took."
"Why are you so sure? Are you a Cherokee scout or something?"
"No, and not a Boy Scout either, Tuts," said Ledger. "I guess I get devious people, and the third track is devious."
"Devious how?"
"It looks like one person went that way, and the prints are the same shoes as Sword Gal, but they're too deep."
"So?"
"So? I think she had the kids walk that way in single file, making sure they each stepped in the other's footprints, and then she walked over that so it looks like only one set of prints went that way. If you don't know much about tracking, it just looks like a clear track left by a single person." Des nodded, appreciating it.
"That's pretty badass. I want to meet this chick."
"Me too. I'd like to buy her a beer, maybe a couple."
"Keep it in your pants, Blondie,"
he laughed. "Seriously, just a beer. I have a wife." Des avoided his eyes for a moment. Ledger had made the statement with total certainty, and as far as Des reckoned, that kind of statement was irrational, maybe scary.
"Don't go getting weird on me now,"
she thought. Ledger did not notice her reaction. "Here's the real prize in the Crackerjack box, Des. The trail the Sword Gal took?
You go that way, and you walk right up to the farm.
Which farm?
She began, then stopped.
Shit, those assholes are going straight to the kids and Lindsay.
Nope, said Ledger. They sent some scouts down the other trails. I'll bet they'll find something on one of them. If Sword Gal's as smart as she seems, there'll be something to find.
Even so.
Even so, said Ledger. We need to split up. You can cut off this path and hit the fire access road that cuts across the farm road. If you leave now, you might get to the farm before the kids. It'll help if they see you.
Why split up? What are you going to do?
I'll catch up. Ledger glanced back the way he'd just come.
I want to have a little fun first.
And with that, he was gone again. Des Fox stared at the empty woods into which he'd just vanished. Who was this guy? She'd always loved the tall, tanned, blonde types, guys who looked like they might have a Viking gene lurking around in their DNA. Billy had that, even though he was the least physical guy she'd ever met. Some of the guys she'd bang when she was mad at Billy were like that. Most of them were roughhouse bikers who she turned into revenge fucks when Billy walked out on her. He did that a lot. Or used to when there was a world. But Ledger, even though he was a lot older than her, was a classic example of the type. That he was powerful, experienced, and confident was evident. That he was a good man was clear, too. Maybe a bit more of a Boy Scout than she usually liked. Des preferred her men to be crazier than she was, and that was saying something. He was a good guy, but he wasn't necessarily a nice guy. And he was sexy, like Chris Hemsworth if he was 50-something and hadn't been eaten by zombies. Des felt a strange and unwanted attraction to him. The wanting to bed him and wanting to hit him upside the head with a tire iron were running neck and neck. Then, as if superimposed over the thought of Ledger, was a smaller, thinner, less capable, less heroic, less crazy, more rational, and normal man. Billy Trout. Des seldom felt guilty for what her thoughts did and what her passions wanted, but at that moment, the ache that pulsed in the broken places of her heart were not for Joe Ledger. They were for Billy Trout.
Nothing's ever easy,
she growled, echoing the words of the southern girl with the shotgun. She set her jaw and turned around to gather her refugees. 35. Rachel L. and Lindsay. Rachel and Lindsay swapped shorthand versions of their stories as they hurried from room to room to make sure the house was buttoned up against what they both knew was coming.
"New Klux Klan?"
asked Rachel, laughing despite the tension.
"Are you serious?"
"Yes,"
said Lindsay, who wasn't smiling.
"That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, and I used to watch Real Wives of New Jersey."
"Stupid or not,"
Lindsay said coldly,
"they're going to come in here and—"
Rachel crossed to her and took the young woman by the shoulders, shaking her slightly and then holding her steady.
"If they try, we'll kill them,"
she said, and she was surprised by the vicious coldness in her own voice.
"We have guns and blades, and we have a fortress."
Baskerville whuffed loudly, as if wanting to be included in her inventory.
"Right, and we have a furry four-legged tank."
The dog wagged his tail. He seemed to understand and appreciate her description.
"We don't know how many of them there are,"
protested Lindsay.
"And they don't know what kind of raw, unfiltered hell they'd be stepping into if they tried to break in here."
Lindsay looked at her.
"You're only a pretend hero, you know. That costume and all, it's not real."
Rachel shrugged.
"What's real, anyway? The world ended and there are zombies out there. Tell me what's real."
Lindsay said nothing.
"I've killed orcs and I've killed bad guys. I used to work in a bank. For Christ's sake. I used to be a nerd girl. Now I fight monsters, and here's the funny part. I win. I'm still alive, and so are my people. So are those kids. You want to stand there and tell me that isn't real?"
Lindsay began to say something. She stopped and shook her head. Baskerville suddenly growled, and an instant later they knew why. Outside on the porch there was a creak, the kind that only sounds like what it is. a heavy foot stepping onto an old board.
Oh, God,
breathed Lindsay.
Gun, snapped Rachel. Check the kitchen door. Keep quiet.
The girl ran to grab the shotgun she'd left on the kitchen table. The dog trotted behind her, ears back, head low, nails clicking on the floorboards. Rachel ran into the living room and crouched down next to the front door, her back pressed against the wall, sword and dagger in her gloved hand. Despite her brave words, her heart pounded like thunder.
36. The Ranger. Ledger wished he had Baskerville with him. The dog could track a frigging white ghost in a snowstorm. Andy was the best friend to have in any kind of fight. Stupid mutt, he grumbled under his breath. Why don't you have the good sense not to stand in front of a bullet, big dummy? He prayed that Baskerville's wound wasn't serious. Losing the dog would crush him. Somewhere out in the world was Baskerville's littermate, Boggart. When Ledger last saw him, the other dog was with Top and Bunny, the other two veteran special operators he'd served with for many years. Finding them was very important to him. With them, he could start building a real team of Rangers who might make a serious difference in this world. Hell, if he had Top and Bunny with him, and a healthy Baskerville and Boggart, these NKK idiots would be dead meat already. Be nice if Sam Imura was with them, too. If Sam was still alive. Sure, the bad guys had the numbers, but Ledger and his team had faced steeper odds before. They'd walked through the Valley of the Shadow and stepped over the bones of their enemies, time and time again. As he moved to intercept the NKK hunters, he had to work on his emotional reaction. These men offended him on a level that ran all the way down to his soul. Years ago, when Ledger was a young teenager, he and his girlfriend Helen had been attacked by a group of older teens. Those boys had stomped Ledger nearly to death, and while he lay there, broken and bleeding, he saw the things they did to Helen. It destroyed them both. They physically survived the assault, but healing tissue and knitting bones did not mean they, as people, had survived. Years later, after several failed suicide attempts, Helen took her own life, and it was Ledger who found her. He had been studying martial arts since the attack and had grown up big, tough, and vicious, but none of those skills could help him save the girl who had stepped off the edge of the world and let the big dark swallow her. The NKK hunters were no different from those boys. They were users, takers, destroyers of hearts and souls. They believed that they had a right to anything they took by force. No law applied to them, and the world's infrastructure had collapsed as if in homage to their dark desires. The world bared its throat to them. That's how they saw it, but Ledger saw it differently. If no laws applied to them, then no laws protected them either. No laws, no restrictions, no mercy. They were hunters of a certain kind, and he was a completely different hunter. He was glad Des Fox, the women, and those children were not here to see what was going to happen.
37. Des Fox and the Refugees. The women and kids were scared, but they were visibly changing from helpless victims to a group of armed survivors. What had begun when they first took the weapons from their dead captors was continuing as Des led them through the woods. The simple fact of finding the fire access road where Des promised it would be strengthened them further. For her part, Des wanted to kick herself for not exploring the area around the bus more thoroughly. The farm where Lindsay waited for them had been there all along. Sure, the family who owned it and the refugees who had holed up there all died, but maybe they wouldn't have if Des had been with them. Maybe, she knew, was a terrible word. It was thorn in the skin. Maybe if she'd found the farmhouse months ago, Beale would be alive, and the kids would be better nourished and, well, saner. Maybe she'd have met Ledger sooner, and maybe he would have been able to lead her to Billy. Maybe, maybe, maybe. The moon was down now, but there were no clouds, and there were stars by the billion. There were also zombies on the road. Not many, but enough.
Eight or nine of them, spaced out, looking lost but turning toward the sound and smell of the living coming toward them.
"If Ledger can do it," Dez muttered, and then ran ahead of the group, attacking the zombies before they could attack her charges.
She smashed aside their white hands with a carpet-coated left forearm and smashed skull bones with her blackjack. Rinse and repeat. That thought made her smile. Then someone was beside her. It was the teenage girl with the shotgun. As Dez was clubbing a dead National Guardsman to the ground, the girl took a stance, tucked the stock of the shotgun into her shoulder, and fired.
"No!"
yelled Dez, but her voice was blasted away as the 12-gauge roared. 10 feet away, a zombie crumbled to the ground, the top of its head blown away.
"Got him,"
said the girl with pride, even as she fished for a fresh shell. Dez ripped the gun out of her hand and nearly hit the stupid kid with the blackjack.
"What's wrong with you?"
demanded the girl, trying to grab the gun back. Before Dez could answer, they heard something that froze them all to silence. It wasn't the moans of the dead still on the road, or even the ones now drawn to them from the surrounding woods. It was a voice, male, and close.
"It's them! They're over there!"
he yelled. It was not Ledger's voice. Dez drew her pistol as the refugees swirled around her.
"Run!"
she roared. 38. Rachel L. and Lindsay. Outside, the footsteps were muffled, and it was hard to tell exactly how many men were on the porch. Rachel didn't like that, but she didn't want to risk peering through the shutters or blinds. There could be 2, or there could be 50. This wasn't a fair fight, even with what they hoped would be an element of surprise. The first footsteps stopped outside the door, and she held her breath. The doorknob shook a little, but the lock held, and Rachel braced herself for them to break down the door. The seconds dragged on, but the crash of the door never came. Confused, Rachel stood cautiously, back still against the wall, but listening for any sounds. The footsteps hadn't started again, but she couldn't tell where anyone was anymore. Suddenly, the window in the kitchen shattered, and Rachel heard Lindsay yell and her shotgun fire loudly. That seemed to be the invitation the men outside were waiting for. The slam of boot against the door startled Rachel, but she reacted quickly as the door flew open, swinging her sword quickly and catching the first man through the door with surprise as her blade lodged in his neck. Pulling it back, she let his body fall to the floor as the man behind him yelled out with surprise, firing his gun uselessly, the bullet striking the wall on the other side of the room. She waited for the next person to come through, but another crash from the kitchen distracted her. This time, the door, she was sure of, and another shotgun blast. In the moment she was distracted, several men had come into the room, and Rachel rushed them from behind, gashing one man across his shoulder, ducking as he swung around at her, cursing, before swinging and slicing her sword into his leg. He collapsed and then turned her attention to the next man, knocking his gun out of his hand with her dagger and slicing across his chest with the blade. The third man had a knife, and she feigned an attack with her dagger, which he went to block, before swiping the other way with her sword, hitting him hard in the head, downing him with a scream and a shower of blood. She heard Lindsay shout and another crash in the kitchen and what sounded like falling furniture. Slamming the door shut, she pushed one of the chairs in front of it to barricade it before running into the kitchen to see if Lindsay needed her help. There seemed to be more men in the kitchen, though most of them were on the floor bleeding, thanks to Baskerville, whose muzzle was soaked in blood. The dog leapt at a man coming through the back door, and Rachel stabbed down hard into the neck of one who lunged at Lindsay on the floor. Shoving his body to the side, Rachel held out her hand to help Lindsay up. Before either of them could say anything, another crash came, this time from the living room. Looking at each other, they both ran together to the room, Lindsay in the lead with the shotgun. Glass and wooden shutter pieces littered the floor, and a number of the men were climbing in through the window. Lindsay didn't hesitate, priming the shotgun and pulling the trigger. As she reloaded, Rachel rushed forward, dragging one of the men that was climbing through out of the window and stabbing her dagger into his chest before pushing him to the side to swing with her sword. Would this ever end? There seemed to be a non-stop stream of men coming through, and Rachel knew they wouldn't be able to take them all on themselves. 39. The Ranger. There are times and circumstances where a smaller force is more dangerous than a larger one. Skirmishers, snipers, and special operators have always known this. They use mobility in the absence of the time delays caused by chain-of-command decisions to act with autonomy and without hesitation. In the right conditions, and with the right planning, they can come out of nowhere, strike, and vanish. Terrorists tried to use this tactic, but while they were often effective, they had no escape plan. Joe Ledger was many things, but suicidal was not one of them. What he was, however, was vicious, cold, and skillful. He crept up on the hunting party and stalked them, counting their numbers, identifying the members of that group who seemed to understand what they were doing, and those whose presence could be exploited to become liabilities. He looked for the leaders and the fighters. Several of them appeared to understand something of woodcraft, which was not good. But they walked with the arrogance of power, expecting to be more dangerous than anything they encountered. That was very useful. At one point, the party split to follow another pair of trails, and again Ledger assumed they were both false trails set down by the woman with the sword. Whoever she was, the woman was really sneaky. Ledger liked sneaky. About half the men followed one trail, and the other half kept following the same set of prints. There were 30 men in the party Ledger followed, a small army. They were all armed, but not every man had a gun. More than half had axes or improvised pole weapons. One man carried a sledgehammer, which was dangerous but impractical. Lacking any sound suppressors, Ledger holstered his gun and drew his knives instead. He kept the rapid-release folding knife in his right because that required speed and dexterity, and he was mostly right-handed. The heavier K-bar was in his left, and though it was not his dominant hand, Spec Ops fighters are trained to be lethal with every limb. He moved ahead of the pack and then flattened out beside the trunk of a big maple, absolutely still. The blades he held were blackened to a matte finish. The group passed 15 feet to his right, following the lead of a man who seemed to understand how to track. Three of the men held flashlights, and everyone was staring at whatever was illuminated by the beams. Ledger did not look at the light, not wanting to spoil his night vision. As the group moved down the trail, Ledger fell into step with the man bringing up the rear. "We'll get them," he said to the man, and it took the guy a couple of seconds to realize that he didn't know his new companion. "I—" began the man, but Ledger clamped a hand over his mouth and cut his throat. He pushed the dying man against a tree to keep him from crashing to the ground. One down. He took the man's flashlight and moved to take his place, shining the light forward at the men in front. If they turned, all they'd see is a silhouette behind a bright light. The men were not walking in formation, and occasionally one would lag back or even deliberately stop to let the rear guard catch up. Ledger liked that. Two down. Three. Four. Somewhere behind him, the dead men would be undergoing a process of transformation as they bled out. The pathogens and parasites of Lucifer 113 would be staging a hostile takeover of the motor cortex, the cranial nerves, the respiration, and other functions, discarding what wasn't necessary, acquiring what was. In less than a minute, each of those dead men would rise and then see the bobbing lights, hear the chatter of men talking, smell the meat. Good. One of the men loudly announced that he had to take a leak. He stopped, unzipped, and died without even knowing death was upon him. Five down. Then six. And seven. It was the eighth man who turned at the wrong time, maybe to say something, and saw a stranger with a wicked grin and a bloody knife. The man got half of a scream out. He died, but the scream was enough. Then everyone was screaming and yelling. And firing. Joe Ledger was gone before the hunters began firing, and almost at once they were firing at the wrong thing, in the wrong direction. Ledger went deep into the brush, cut left, and circled around before coming back at the group from the front. He spotted the tracker who stood next to the brute with the sledgehammer. The tracker had a pistol in his hand, and he was firing wide of the group, aiming at God knew what. With all the lead flying, the leaves and branches were dancing and popping, making it look like the woods were filled with attackers. Ledger sheathed his K-bar and folding knife, drew his pistol, and ran at the tracker. He fired two rounds into the man's back, then parked a single round in the side of the sledgehammer man's neck. He kept firing, taking six more men, and then he was gone again just as the hunters realized that not all of the gunfire was theirs. They turned, their yells rising to shrieks of fury and panic, and they did the one thing they probably thought was the smartest move, but it was the single stupidest thing they could do. It was a hit-and-run specialist's dream reaction. They spread out to try and find him. They didn't know who was out there, or what he looked like, or even how many attackers they were facing. Instead of forming a defensive group, they offered themselves up to the demon in the forest, and Ledger began hunting them. One after another after another. 40. Dez Fox and the Refugees.
Run!
Screamed Dez again, shoving the women and children forward. The man who'd yelled was not yet in sight, but he sounded close. 100 yards? A little more? Too damn close in any case. The southern girl had her shotgun back and had reloaded it. She was white-faced with the horror of the consequences of having fired that shot.
I'm sorry,
she said, and kept saying it. Dez wanted to punch her.
Shut up and move!
They began walking backward, both of them pointing guns toward the darkness at the other end of the road. Nothing seemed to move down there, and there were no more shouts.
Maybe they...
began the girl, but then there was a single sharp crack that split the air. The girl coughed once, then she abruptly sat down in the road. The shotgun clattered to the blacktop. The girl looked up at Dez and opened her mouth as if to offer another apology, but all that came out was a torrent of dark blood. The girl's eyes rolled high, and she fell backward. Dez stared at her for a moment.
There!
Came the shout, a different male voice. Dez whirled, saw figures emerging from the shadows alongside the road. 4 men. 6. More.
Christ!
Cried Dez, and she fired 4 shots and then turned, not knowing if she hit anything. Gunfire tore the night apart and something buzzed past her ear with the angry urgency of a wasp. Dez ducked and jagged right, then ran into the woods alongside the road. She'd been shot at before, and she knew that when you know you had a near miss, it's not time to celebrate your luck. It's a wake-up call that your store of luck is running low. She didn't push it. Instead, she ran. Guns pucked and banged in the night, and she heard the whine of rounds and the dull crunch of bullets hitting trees or skipping along the blacktop. How far was the farmhouse? It had to be close. She caught up with the women and barked at them to leave the road and follow her. Together they dove into the woods, cutting at an angle to try and pick up the farm road. Something moved in front of them, and one of the women screamed in absolute terror and agony as a dark shape grabbed her. Dez struck the thing with her blackjack, crushing its forehead, but as it fell back, it took a mouthful of bleeding skin. Blood pumped from a torn artery in the woman's throat, and she tried to stem the flow with palsied fingers. Dez stared at her, into her eyes, and shot her. The other women gasped and drew back, horrified, sickened, but then they turned and kept running. This was the world. This was how the world was. Appalled at what she had just done, Dez turned and followed. Men shouted behind them, and Dez could hear them crashing into the woods. They fired randomly, but there was no way they could see to aim. It was a chase now, a race. The woods thinned abruptly, and the women and kids ran into a wooden rail, rebounded, fell down, crying out in pain. One woman reeled back, clutching a broken wrist, but Dez grabbed her by the hair, forced her to bend and shoved her between the slats. The road was right there.
Left!
She cried as she half-shoved, half-carried the injured woman.
Go! Go!
They hit the hard-packed dirt and ran in a pack. Dez let go of the woman with the broken arm and faded back, shoving and slapping at the others to make sure they all kept moving. Then she saw the first of the men reach the rail. In the darkness, they crashed into it, too, and in the moment of stalled impact, Dez took aim and fired. Even in that darkness, the men were easy targets. She didn't need to kill, she needed to stop them. She aimed center mass and emptied an entire magazine into them. Their howls of pain and fear filled the night. Dez ran, swapping out the magazines as she went, slapping her last one into place. That gave her 10 bullets. There were at least 24 men behind her, and maybe more. No telling how many she'd killed or wounded. The rest would be coming. A hail of bullets tried to find her in the dark. She cut off the road and ran through the tall weeds on the verge, then dodged between a stand of maples to enter the corner of the big farm field. The house was there, and she could see the shapes of darkened figures pelting through the tobacco plants toward it. The front door opened, and light spilled out. The fool kid had not thought to douse her candle before opening the door. That light was a beacon. It was the brightest thing in the world right then, and it drew every single eye toward it, the living and the dead. But then Des realized with a sick lurch of her heart that the figure in the doorway wasn't Lindsay, and it wasn't someone coming out of the house. It was a man, and he was going in. Other men clustered around the place, and only then could she hear the sounds of gunfire and screaming coming from the house. But worst of all, threaded through those sounds were other noises, the howl of a dog, and the high-pitched, terrified screams of children. 41. Rachel L. and Lindsay. The front door burst inward again, half torn from its hinges by a powerful kick. The chairs Rachel had used to brace it went flying, and a huge man filled the entrance. He had monstrous shoulders and wild hair, and in his hands was a scythe he must have taken from the barn. To Rachel, he looked like a mad killer from one of those old slasher films, the kind of relentless killer who hunted for teenagers having sweaty sex and then killed them in brutal ways. The man spotted Lindsay, who had come running into the living room for more shells.
"Bitch!"
he roared and charged at her. Maybe he didn't see Rachel, or maybe he didn't think she was real. A woman dressed in armor carrying a sword. Or, more likely, his mind had snapped and plunged into a place so dark that nothing mattered, not even his own safety. He raised the scythe and swung it with a feral growl. Lindsay dropped flat on the floor and the blade missed her by 2 inches. But then Rachel was there. She swung her sword in a smaller, tighter arc, the blade shearing through denim and filthy skin and muscle. Rachel was savvy enough not to try to cut through the leg. Bone was so much harder to cut than movies made it seem. It caught and snapped blades. She pierced flesh, and the speed of her slash left a slender red line on his trouser leg that seemed like nothing at all until the man turned toward her, and then the wound parted in a red scream. Blood geysered out. Rachel dodged away light as a dancer and swung the blade again. This time she aimed higher, and this time the blade bit through Bone. But it was the more slender and vulnerable bones of the big man's wrist. The scythe flew away with one hand still clutching it. Rachel's third cut was through the flesh of his throat. She kicked him sideways so that he fell across the threshold as a second man leaped inside, a butcher's cleaver in his hand. Her blade was longer, faster, and she was already moving. Behind her, Lindsay finished loading the gun and ran back to the kitchen. Down the hall there was the sound of a piercing shriek buried beneath the savage growl of a brutish dog. And outside, the night was filled with gunfire and shouts. 42. The Ranger. Ledger ghosted the hunters, making them pay for their arrogance, making them afraid of the dark and of what was in it. They had been so powerful for so long, comforted by the conceit born of victories over others. Now they were learning the realities of the food chain. When there was a lot of gunfire shattering the night, he contributed his own, often slipping between hunters and killing one and then yelling as if he was one of the surprised hunters. In the dark, in all that confusion, the hunters could not tell that he wasn't one of them, and he killed them for their lack of awareness. Then he melted into the woods when he felt his luck was running thin, but even then he growled at the two men closest to him to come on, to follow, and they followed because when panic rules the moment, the startled tend to take their cues from anyone who seems to know what's what. He led the men 20 feet down a deer path, and then he killed them too. Of the 30 men who had followed this trail, half of them were dead or dying. Ledger went silent and moved away from the confusion, circling back to the path that would take him to the farm road. Behind him, the men fired and screamed and did not understand anything about what had happened. As Ledger faded away, he heard fresh screams and knew that the confusion he'd left behind was grinding on itself, men shooting their companions in the dark, and things that had once been part of that group of living rising as the hungry dead. Ledger grinned as he ran. 43. Rachel and Lindsay. Screams filled the house. Three men lay on the floor clutching at savage wounds ripped into them by the dog that, either despite or because of his wounds, had gone into a killing frenzy. As they forced their way through windows, Baskerville grabbed them, tore at them, and left them crippled and shrieking on the floor. Lindsay had thrown the shotgun down because the barrels were too hot to touch, and now held a bolt-action hunting rifle in her hands, firing clumsily but unable to miss because there were men at every window. In the living room, Rachel was hacking at men who crowded each other to get inside. One man opened up with a handgun, and Rachel had to run into the dining room to survive. She grabbed the corner of the big table and with a grunt of effort turned it over, spilling weapons and boxes of shells. Gunfire hit the big oak, but few of them punched through. As much as she was loath to do it, Rachel dropped her sword and picked up a small frame automatic, checked that it was loaded, crouched down at one corner of the table, and reached around to fire blindly. She'd read about target-rich environments in novels. That was when it was almost impossible to miss because there were so many hostiles. She fired her gun dry, hearing screams. She swapped out the magazine. She'd been to gun ranges, and she knew how to use a pistol, but she didn't like them. She was a swordswoman. But this wasn't a time for preferences. All that mattered was surviving. She fired and fired and fired. 44. Dez Fox. Dez raced across the farm field, not bothering to run serpentine or take cover. There were figures everywhere, and everyone she saw seemed to be caught up in a frenzy of bloody violence. It was like running through hell itself. Men dressed as hunters wrestled with pale-faced corpses dressed as soldiers or farmers. One of the refugee women had a man down and was stabbing him over and over and over, while a 9-year-old girl tried to pull her back from whatever brink she'd climbed out onto. Zombies lay dead, and dead hunters were twitching back to unlife. Dez fired her last bullets, killing 6 men. She had no idea if they were zombies or NKK hunters. They fell and her slide locked back. A zombie lunged at her and Dez's pistol went flying. She jammed the carpet armor into its mouth, drew her blackjack, and beat the thing's head into a ruin. Then a hand clamped on her shoulder and she was spun toward a pair of living men, hunters who leered at her and, despite everything that was happening around them, began tearing at her clothes, as if she was there for the taking, as if she was helpless. The blackjack whipped through the night, shattered finger bones, deconstructing faces, smashing into eyes, breaking, dehumanizing, destroying. As they fell, she bent and searched for weapons, found a revolver with 4 rounds left. She ran toward the house and found targets for each round. Then she brained a zombie with the butt of the gun and lost the weapon as the creature collapsed against the side of the well. "The house!" someone yelled, and Dez saw one of the refugee women pushing children up onto the porch. But the picture was wrong. Men rushed at them, grabbing the kids, pulling them away from her. One of the men swung something at the woman, and she fell with the kind of abrupt looseness that spoke of a broken neck. Dez tore across the field to the gravel turnaround in front of the house. There were 3 men trying to drag the kids away. She hit one from behind, crushing his skull, feeling the bones give beneath the heavy leather-wrapped lead. As the man staggered, she shoved him toward another of the men, and he had not yet seen her. He turned sharply, crying out in surprise as the dead weight collapsed against him. Dez ignored him as he fell and closed on the 3rd man, the one who had killed the refugee woman. He held a heavy length of black pipe wrapped in electrician's tape. The end glistened. Dez did not pause to challenge or threaten. She attacked, driving right at the man as he raised his pipe to strike. She went in low and fast and slapped the blackjack across his right kneecap. The degree of pain it inflicted must have felt like a gunshot, and it instantly became the whole of his world. His pipe fell as he reached for his shattered kneecap with both hands. The blackjack did terrible things to him. Dez turned away, her face spattered with blood, snatched up the pipe and stepped over to the 3rd man, who was still trying to climb out from under the improbably heavy slackness of his dead friend. He froze, looking up at the pipe as it whistled down at him. There was one split second of sad resignation on his face, and then he didn't have a face. Dez ran to the kids, who were quivering with terror. They were the three youngest from the group of refugees.
"Stay close,"
she told them, and climbed the steps to the house. She needed to get to the other guns. There were too many of the hunters to fight with only a blackjack and a piece of pipe. A voice rang out behind her.
"That bitch just killed Marty!"
Dez turned to see two of the hunters rushing in, both of them armed with baseball bats. Dez turned and ran from them, her shoes slipping on the bloody porch stairs. There was a man in the doorway, but he was looking the wrong way. So Dez smashed in the back of his skull and shoulder-shoved him inside, and damn near got shot. As the man fell, a bullet chunked into the doorframe inches from Dez's ear. She dove sideways, and as she fell, saw that the living room was heaped with corpses and with badly wounded, all men. The only person on her feet was a woman who looked like she stepped out of a movie about Vikings. Leather and fur and armor, but she held a gun in her hand, and the barrel was tracking toward Dez's face.
"No!"
cried Dez, but the woman swung the gun back toward the doorway and fired six shots. Dez turned to see the two men who'd chased her reeling backward. Dez was up in a flash and ran up and over the bodies, falling, slipping, and finally crawling toward the crazy woman with the gun. She herded the refugee women and girls with her.
"Get behind the table!"
she roared, and they obeyed without question, flooding around the heavy oak barricade. They could all see the Viking woman with the gun, but she was female, and so were they. The attackers were all male, and that drew a deep and recognizable line in the sand for all of them.
"Dez Fox?"
demanded the Viking woman as she reloaded.
"Yeah, but who the fuck are you?"
Instead of answering, the woman tossed the gun to her, bent, and picked up a sword. The refugee women had their weapons, though all of their guns were empty. Even an empty gun is still a metal club, though, and they clutched these as they huddled behind the barricade. Dez joined them, liking the solidity of the oak table. There were screams, a girl's, from the kitchen, and the deep-chested growl of a big dog. The Viking woman flashed Dez a wicked grin and yelled,
"For Asgard!"
Then she ran into the kitchen. The next screams Dez heard were all male. Dez gaped for a moment longer.
"This is fucking nuts,"
she said. And then more men came pouring into the house. 45. The Ranger. Joe followed the sounds of gunfire all the way to the farm. He ran as fast as he could, wishing he hadn't used so much of his ammunition. Would he get there in time? Would it matter if he did? The NKK had the numbers, and if they took hostages, what then? He broke from the forest and plunged into the tobacco field. The house was under siege. There seemed to be an army swarming around it, too many to fight. But as Ledger closed in, he realized that more than half of those men were no longer alive. Freshly killed hunters staggered through the overgrown plants and dirt, attacking anything with a pulse. There were at least a dozen fights in progress as the zombies fell upon their former friends, but that left several living hunters. Too many? He saw a corpse just beginning to rise, and its dead hand still clutched an assault rifle, a SIG SG-550 with a bulky box magazine. Ledger had lost a lot of his faith in the kindness of whomever was on call in heaven, but right then he would have knelt and kissed the Pope's ring. He kicked the zombie in the head, pinned it to the ground with a knee, and tore the rifle from its twitching fingers. He brained it with the stock, then slapped pockets until he came up with a second magazine. As he shoved the magazine into his pocket, he assessed the scene, calculating the odds and doing dangerous math in his head. His best chance of survival was to turn around and go. He had a family to find, friends to find. This wasn't his war.
"Fuck it," he said. "And fuck you."
Ledger began running toward the house. 46. In Hell. Dez Fox fired at a man wearing a John Deere cap, exactly like the one she'd worn when she went out drinking back home. Seeing it reminded her of too many things, so she put a bullet through it. The man fell, but his finger jerked the trigger of the huge single-barrel 10-gauge shotgun he carried. The buckshot sprayed the room, and two pellets caught Dez, one in the shoulder and one in the cheek. She staggered, pain exploding and blood pouring from the wounds. One of the refugee women sat down with her back to the wall, a dozen spots on her face, and throat suddenly blossoming with red. Her eyes rolled up, and she fell over. Two other women rushed to try and stanch the wounds, and Dez had no idea if they were already too late. Another man raised a Ruger Blackhawk at her, but he suddenly shrieked and twisted around as one of his dead friends on the floor bit deeply into his calf. There were a dozen corpses crowding the living room, and a few had been dropped with head wounds. The others were writhing and moaning as new life ignited in their brains and new hungers awoke in their souls. The four living men who were trying to get to Dez and the refugees, the men were all armed with axes, clubs, and knives, and they screamed and began smashing at the newly reanimated dead. The room became a slaughterhouse. Blood shot from torn arteries. Howls of rage and agony filled the air. Dez began scrabbling on the floor for fresh rounds, finding some, not finding enough.
"Oh, fuck me," she breathed.
Lindsay struggled to reload her gun, but her hands were streaked with blood and sweat, and the weapon slipped from her grasp and landed on the chest of a dead man. She bent for it, but then the dead man's eyes snapped open and his eyes clicked toward her. She saw the exact moment when they changed from the vacant eyes of the true dead to the predatory eyes of a monster. She tried to yank her hand free, but the creature had a solid grip and was stronger than her. It pulled her hand toward its mouth, which was working as if already chewing on her.
"Watch!"
yelled a voice, and Lindsay looked up as Rachel stamped a booted foot down on the zombie's face and then swung her sword in a glittering arc. Lindsay fell back with the dead hand still clamped around her. She yelped and swatted at it until the slack fingers fell away and it lay like some grotesque spider on the kitchen floor. Rachel grabbed Lindsay and hauled her unceremoniously to her feet and shoved her toward the corner by the stove. Heavy iron pots were stacked on the drain board, including a cast-iron frying pan. She hoped the kid would get the idea but didn't have time to watch. Men were still trying to fight their way in through the shattered door and the kitchen windows. So many of them. It confused her. They'd seen how many of their own had died in this siege, and yet they kept coming. The cost was so high. Were they lost in some kind of battle madness or group hysteria? Was it a lust for revenge for their fallen friends, or were they just insane? She swung and stabbed with her sword, but with each blow her shoulder and arm muscles were screaming at her. Even hardened by 6 months of combat against the dead, she knew she wasn't able to keep fighting for much longer. Her wrist throbbed from the impact shock of each blow, and the smell of blood was making her sick. Her heart was beating wildly in her chest, and each exhalation felt like a blast of heated air from a furnace. Joe Ledger rushed the house, coming up at an angle that would let him see the front and one side. 6 men were fighting a knot of zombies. Ledger hosed them with the assault rifle from 15 feet away. The living went down and the zombies dove onto them, biting the bleeding flesh. Ledger left them to their grisly meal. Those monsters could be dealt with later, and for the moment they were useful to him. He saw another of the dead staggering toward the slaughter, but Ledger spun him around, grabbed him by the hair and back of the belt, and ran him toward a hunter who was slapping a fresh magazine into his gun on the porch steps.
"Here,"
said Ledger as he flung the zombie against the man. They went down in a wild tangle of teeth, scrabbling fingers, blood, and howls. Ledger caught the man's gun before it could land in the dirt. With the assault rifle in his left, he ran up onto the porch with his new pistol leading the way. The 3 men on the porch turned to see their comrade wrestling with a zombie and a stranger rushing at them. They died. The last of them fell backward into the living room, and Ledger stepped on his chest as he entered the house. He saw Dez Fox behind a dining room table, and everything around her was an orgy of murder. The dead outnumbered the living, and they were tearing the hunters apart. Soon there would only be zombies in here, 16 at least. Ledger paused for 1 moment, doing more calculations about how many rounds he had left between pistol and assault rifle. Every single shot would have to count. A zombie crawled toward him and tried to bite his shin. Ledger whipped his leg up and brought his heel down in a devastating axe kick. He couldn't hear the snap of bones beneath the general din, but from the way the monster fell, Ledger was certain that he wouldn't need to use a bullet on that one. He raised his gun and fired. 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 Dez Fox was seldom happy to see most people. She liked kids and dogs. She liked banging men. but she wasn't really a people person. That said, when Captain Joe Ledger stepped through the door, a gun in each hand, she would have married him on the spot, or banged him, or whatever. He was nobody's idea of a white knight, and she was 10 million miles away from being a damsel in distress. She'd have cut the balls off of anyone who even suggested that. But Ledger was a fellow cop, a fellow soldier, and he was here. Not to rescue her, but to help her save her kids. Behind her, the refugee women and girls huddled in a quavering mass, all of them pushed to the edge of total hysteria. As soon as he opened up on the crowd of hunters and zombies, the mass of struggling bodies seemed to turn, to focus their awareness, however fractured, on him. That gave Dez time to find the box of 9mm rounds and cram some into a magazine. No time for a full count, though. She slapped it in place and began firing. Baskerville raised his muzzle from the dead hunter and sniffed the air. It was thick with the smells of blood, piss, gun smoke, and sweat, but there, deep inside the oleo of scents, was something else, a scent he knew like none other, the scent of his pack leader. He threw his head back and let loose with a howl of terrible red joy. A man grabbed for Lindsay, missed her arm, and caught the shoulder of her blouse. He yanked hard just as she lunged backward and the whole front of the shirt tore away. The bra she wore beneath was soiled and spattered with blood, old and new. The man actually leered at her and started to say something. She grabbed the skillet off the stove and swung it with all of her fear, strength, anger, and disgust across his face. He spun away from her spewing teeth and dropped at once to his knees. Lindsay hit him again, this time on the back of the head. He pitched forward at once and began twitching like a trout on the floor. Rachel was fighting two men, both of them armed with knives. One had a big buck hunting knife and the other had a bread knife. She had a sword and dagger. She wanted to say something, to drop one of those cool lines that heroes in movies always manage to come up with in the heat of the moment. This wasn't a movie. This was her life, so she saved her breath for fighting. The slide locked back on Ledger's pistol, and so he jammed the empty gun into the throat of a hunter, crushing the windpipe and hyoid bone. The man clawed at his throat as if he could somehow force it to breathe, but that option was no longer his, and he fell with a look of profound defeat on his face. Ledger took the SG-550 in both hands, set the selector switch to single shot, put the stock to his shoulder, braced his feet, and began firing, one headshot after another. Bang! 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 Each shot was a crack of thunder in the room. Anyone who tried to charge him, living or dead, died, either from one of his heavy 5.56x45mm NATO rounds or the bullets Dez Fox fired. Caught between two superb killers with automatic weapons, the hunters and the zombies all fell. Down, down, down. The last man tried to make a break for it, running over the bodies of his friends toward the smashed-in window. Ledger stepped into his path and slammed him across the face with the stock of the assault rifle. The man went staggering back, spun, looking for another way out. He saw Dez point a gun at him. The man tried to speak, but his jaw was broken and only blood and a mewling mumble of words came from his mouth. He raised his hands in a pleading gesture, begging for mercy where none existed. Dez Fox shot him in the face. Lindsay swung the skillet at the hands reaching in through the window, breaking bones. There were no howls of pain, though, only moans of unassuageable hunger. She kept smashing, though, the skillet heavy in her bloody hands. It was the only weapon she had left. One of the two attackers was down, but the other was giving Rachel a real fight. He was quick, and although she had the longer reach with her sword, he moved like a cat, parrying, evading, dancing out of the way. As they fought, he kept up a patter of ugly words, using them with as much skill as the knife he carried.
"You're pretty good with that thing," he said, laughing. "But that won't matter none. And you're just making it worse for yourself, darling. Old Teddy's gonna teach you some manners. Yes, ma'am. I'm gonna enjoy teaching you the facts of life. Oh, hell yes. And you look like you'd enjoy it, too. You got a rack on you."
And Baskerville slammed into him from the side. Rachel stood there, her arms sagging to her sides, her weapons feeling like 100-pound weights. chest heaving and sweat pouring down her face and throat. She watched the dog and the man. The dog and what it did to the man. The dog and what quickly stopped being a man. It was a dreadful way to die, but her heart was a stone. She looked around the kitchen. Lindsay was hammering at dead hands with a skillet. Baskerville was tearing at something that no longer even screamed. Everything and everyone else was dead. Dead. She stood in a lake of blood.
This is the world,
she thought.
Just this.
Death and pain, the rapacious malevolence of the living, the unending hunger of the dead. This is what the world has become, this and nothing more.
God,
she murmured. She did not even feel the tears that ran like molten silver down her cheeks. Then she looked down at the floor and saw that some of the old floorboards were warped from age. Blood seeped down between them, and fresh horror rose in her mind as she imagined the slow rainfall of red droplets falling into the basement. It was only then that she could hear the muffled screams, not of pain, but of horror. The children.
Good God, the children!
She took a deep breath and raised her sword and dagger and staggered with leaden feet over to the window to help Lindsay, to fight, to end this. But as she reached Lindsay to push her out of the way, a voice rang out behind her.
Move!
Rachel and Lindsay both turned to see Des Fox come striding into the kitchen. A small group of women and children, all strangers to Rachel, crowded behind her. Des pushed between Rachel and Lindsay, raised her pistol at the dead, and fired. There were other shots, the heavier bark of an assault rifle from outside, and more of the dead fell away. The guns roared and roared, and then stopped. Everything seemed to stop. The whole world juddered down to stillness. Rachel listened to the night. She heard nothing. No new shots. No moans. No cries of anger or pain. Nothing. Baskerville suddenly went running into the dining room, through the living room and outside, yelping and barking, not in distress, in joy. A moment later, the dog came back inside, and with him was a tall man with graying blonde hair, a tanned face lined with age and scars, carrying an assault rifle. Captain Ledger, the one Lindsay had told him about. The man looked down around at the carnage. Then he dropped the weapon onto the chest of the man Baskerville had just killed. He smiled, a faint and sad smile that showed his age. "It's over," he said. And Lindsay began to cry. 47. Des Fox. Des Fox went down into the cellar, and her kids swarmed around her, pulling her down the last few steps, hugging her, kissing her, clinging to her despite the blood and dirt on her clothes. She dropped to her knees and wept with them. The last of the women survivors went with her, and together they shared in the thing that exists when all of the violence and bloodshed and horror has passed. Life. 48. The farmhouse. It took days to bury all the dead. It was grisly work, back-breaking and heartbreaking. The bodies of the refugee women and children who'd been killed were given markers. It was the wrong time of year for flowers, but Ledger had no doubt there would be some in the spring. The corpses of the NKK men were buried in a gully and covered over with wheelbarrows filled with dirt. The only marker was when Baskerville raised a leg and pissed all over it. Des saw that and laughed until she cried. While the women were burying the dead, Ledger spent most of his time in the forests, hunting. Twice Des went with him. They'd worked in grim silence and never once talked about the things they did out there. All that mattered was that they could tell the refugees, without lying, that none of the NKK men would be coming back. Not one. not as living attackers or dead biters. It would have been nice to be able to say that all threats had been dealt with, but Ledger was tired of lies. The nights at the farmhouse were long. There were tears, and there were stories. One of the women died 2 days later. She was the one who'd taken some of the buckshot in the throat. Dez made sure she wouldn't rise again, and they all stood with her when the woman was buried alongside the others. No one had a prayer to say, except Rachel, who recited something in Elvish. Ledger caught a look at Dez, and she raised her eyebrows as if to say, "It's better than anything I have." It was nearly a week before Rachel told them she had to leave. The whole group walked her out to the road, and Lindsay handed her a sheet of paper with everyone's name on it. Rachel looked at it, and then turned away to hide the tears that sprang into her eyes. She walked alone down the road, and everyone stood and watched until she was out of sight. 49. Rachel L. Rachel couldn't find the words in her head to express how grateful she was to see the hospital ahead as they left the woods, excited to be back with her friends and nervous that something had happened to them all at the same time. As she approached the large gate, she saw Matt, one of her Avengers Towers survivors, guarding it, broadsword in hand and her heart soared. He called out to her in excitement, and she heard the sound of the gate being unbolted. She smiled at the women who traveled with her.
"This is home, at least for now. It's safe here. There's a lot of us here. We're going to build a future."
She expected Matt to be the first one out to greet them, but it wasn't him that rushed out to her. Instead, her eyes focused on blonde hair and red cloak, broad shoulders and big muscles, the image of a true superhero, and her heart rushed as a smile came to her face. Brett ran towards her, his smile matching her own, but he stopped as he approached, his eyes taking in every inch of her as if he didn't believe she was real. It had been nearly a month since she'd been gone, and so much had happened. She had changed so much. She'd become nearly a different person. She had a mission now, a goal, something she needed to do. It wasn't just about saving people and bringing them together. It was about making this world and the hand they were dealt worth living for everyone. She could only imagine what she looked like, but she knew now what she was. She didn't need to pretend to be a superhero. She didn't need to play make-believe. And she knew that Brett could see it too. She didn't need to make believe she was a hero anymore, because she was one. 50. The Ranger and the Cop. Joe and Dez organized the survivors into work teams. They fortified the house, repairing damage from the attack and reinforcing every door and window. Stronger shutters were constructed with wood stripped from the barn. The women began digging a trench around the house, and the kids spent their days sharpening sticks to line the bottom of the trench. Dez and two of the refugee women went hunting, for food this time. They brought back 2 deer and a half dozen rabbits. But the next day one of the girls went out and set snares to catch rabbits. She returned with 6 live ones, 2 male and 4 females. Everyone approved. Maybe they'd be able to find some chickens and cows, too. Anything was possible. And that was something Ledger saw. The dawning of belief, of hope for survival, and maybe even a future. Seeing that chipped away some of the black ice that clung to his heart, and it rekindled some of his own optimism. The next morning, he was pretty sure it was a Saturday, not that such things really mattered anymore. He told Dez that he was leaving the next day. She protested. They argued. Crockery was thrown. But in the end, he played the best card he had. Billy Trout and the other buses. Dez couldn't take all those kids and the women on a hunt for Billy. It was a better job for one person and a dog. They ate a last meal, a big breakfast, and there were a lot of hugs and tearful goodbyes. As if Ledger had been part of this community, this family, for years. Lindsay gave him a list of names, too. Ledger folded it carefully and put it in his pocket. It was something he knew he would want to read again. maybe often. Then it was time to go. Ledger clicked his tongue for Baskerville, and the dog sprang to his feet, but once they were on the porch, the big hound seemed to stall. The animal looked around at the faces of all the kids and at the women who had fought alongside him. His big tail swished back and forth. He got a lot of hugs, and even some kisses, too.
"Come on, you big goof," growled Ledger. "You're a shameless damn flirt."
Joe got a lot of kisses and hugs, too. They made him happy, and it broke his heart. That these powerful women and these beautiful kids should embrace him and kiss his cheeks as if he wasn't a monster and a killer. It was proof the world was absolutely goddamn insane. Lindsay stood by the door. Kids all around her, and there were tears in her eyes. Ledger kissed her on the forehead. Then he and Dez and Baskerville walked out to the road and stood for a moment, watching the clouds move across the sky. Dez fished something out of her pocket, a note sealed in an envelope. She looked deeply embarrassed and then handed it to Ledger. The envelope was pink, and the name Billy was scrawled across it.
"Don't say a goddamn word, Joe," she warned. "It was the only stationery I could find."
It was very, very pink. He laughed.
"I will kneecap you," she said. "Hand to God."
But she laughed, too. It was a strange sound, rare in the world these days. They both seemed to realize it at the same time, and their laughter faded. Still, they smiled at each other. Dez cleared her throat and nodded to the note.
"You'll give it to him?"
"If he's still where I left him, yes, I will."
"What if he's not there?"
she asked. He shrugged.
"Guess I go looking for him."
"You don't have to," she said.
Ledger looked around at the big empty world.
"What else have I got to do?"
he asked. It was meant as a joke, but Dez looked as if it was the saddest thing she'd ever heard.
"I'll find him,"
Ledger said. She studied him, then nodded.
"Yeah, I know you will."
He bent to kiss her cheek, and Dez Fox suddenly grabbed him and pulled him to her in a fierce embrace. She kissed him with a startling and intense heat, and then shoved him back.
"What? What?"
he said, unable to form a cohesive question. Dez gave him a wicked grin.
"That's so you don't walk away from this thinking you got nothing out of it."
He shook his head. "You sure Billy Trout didn't just seize the moment and run away from you?"
"Seriously, one round through the kneecap," she said, laying her hand on the butt of her pistol.
He mimed, zipping his mouth shut. They stood for one moment longer, two warriors who were now connected on a level they could not express in words, but which each of them completely understood.
"Goodbye, Desdemona Fox," he said.
"Goodbye, Captain Ledger,"
she said. Baskerville whuffed quietly. And then the big man clicked his tongue again and turned away. He never looked back at the old farmhouse. Not once. The End.
This concludes the reading of Dark of Night, A Story of Rot and Ruin by Jonathan Mayberry and Rachel Lavin. Copyright 2016 by Jonathan Mayberry and Rachel Lavin. This book was read by Ray Porter. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Journalstone LLC and was produced in 2016 by Blackstone Audio Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.